Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Welcome to Prison Pipeline. My name is Rachel Lamb, and I am your host for today's show. So for listeners joining us for the first time, Prison Pipeline is a monthly program focused on social justice issues relating to the U.S. penal system. But today, I am a guest host for Isabel Sinclair, and Isabel is joining us on the other side of the mic. She's here in the studio with Kundalini Yoga meditation teacher, Stuart Perrin. Isabel and Stuart have just published a new book called From Darkness to Light, a collection of letters written between them while Isabel was incarcerated at Oregon's Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. The book is an inspiring story of Isabel's transformation as she developed a healing student-teacher relationship with Stuart, and ultimately, a healing relationship with her higher self through dedication and commitment to meditation practice. So, hi, Stuart and Isabel.
Hi.
Hey.
Thanks for having us here.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here with us today to share your story. So, I guess we'll just jump right into questions. Isabel, I'm going to start with you. Can you talk a little bit about how this meditation practice came to you in prison and what motivated you to stick with it?
I remember when I'd first gotten into prison, so I found this maybe 3 months after I got in, and I was trying everything and anything because I wanted to find something to enrich my time. And, you know, because I was really looking for meaning. So I signed up for all of the religious services that I could. And I remember I saw this advertisement for Meditation 101, and I was like, I already know how to meditate. Like, what can somebody teach me about that? So I didn't sign up for it. But I remember one day that I was sitting in the unit, and this friend of mine sat down next to me, and she's like, you know, there's something I think you might be really interested in. So she pulls me over, and she's like, you know, I've been going to this meditation practice, and there's this person, the special guest. You know, he comes very infrequently, and he comes in from New York, and he's really amazing and interesting, and it's a little weird, but I think you'd be really into it. And she didn't really give me anything more specific than that, but whatever it was enough to get me interested. So I submitted a form, what they call a kite, and asked to be put on the list. So I got into the list because this was the class was just 5 days later, maybe. So it was kind of cool that I got in because most people don't in that amount of time. So I attend my first class, and Stuart is there. And I mean, I just remember, not knowing what was going to happen, but feeling tremendously drawn to being there. Like it was one of the weirdest things because it felt like once I walked out the door, I was not in control of my actions. Like I was just kind of pulled there. And I just knew after I sat in that first class, like I didn't know what it was that I found, but I knew that I needed to do it. And it was really simple. And so I did.
Stuart, you've been teaching this practice for quite a few years, and you teach all over the country and even internationally. And so I imagine you get a lot of letters from lots of different students. What was it about the letters between you and Isabel specifically that inspired you to compile them into this book?
Well, I'd been, before Isabel got on the scene, I've been writing to a number of inmates, and they've been writing back to me. The letters really helped them. It really showed that somebody cared about them. Somebody was willing to respond and talk about their needs and try to help them to work through their situations. And I probably had, 100 letters that people had written me by the time Isabel came in. And when Isabel, I guess, heard that I received letters, she sent me a letter. And it was a kind of mixed up, you know, a little arrogant, you know, very spacey letter of somebody, a 21-year-old kid who knew it all. And I kind of laughed and I wrote her back a letter. And then she responded and I responded. And we wound up writing 160 letters to each other. And in the course of those letters, or between the two of us, there were 80 letters apiece. In the course of those letters, there was such an amazing transformation that took place in Isabel's life from, you know, as I say, a frightened but all-knowing young kid who was arrogant and a little bit difficult, you know, to somebody who had so much gratitude and love, and to the point where she told me that I'm grateful that I'm in Coffee Creek Prison because I found this meditation and it saved my life. So it was an extraordinary correspondence. On my part, it had to do with a lot of patience. On Isabel's part, it had to do with working out a lot of intricate inner unhappiness. And eventually, you know, nobody gets completely through it, but she began to work it out. And then I said to myself, Stuart, you have 270 letters between yourself and these and the people at Coffee Creek Prison. I said, it would make an incredible book. So I went through all the letters, and I realized that the real book was what Isabel wrote to me and I wrote to her. First of all, Isabel has good literary talent. She knows how to write, and she knows how to explore her inner self through writing. And I found that to be quite amazing in a 21-year-old person. And I said, these letters really can help maybe even save the lives of people that read them, to see what the potential is, what can happen to a human being, you know, how a human being can work through all their unhappiness, their depression, their fear, their insecurities, their anger. Anger is a big one. And find something in life that ultimately they can contribute amazingly well to our society. So I decided that I was going to publish this book. And on one page, there's Isabel's letters and then my letter. And each letter is an answer to the other. And there's 80 letters apiece from the time when she first started studying with me there to even after she got out. You know, she started going to college and doing, you know, really incredible, started doing incredible things with her life. So I thought this was something that could be of tremendous, tremendous use, especially for inmates in prisons to read this thing and to see what the possibilities were if somebody would find a way to work on themselves that really takes them deep enough to connect to spirit and to open and to transform the pain, the unhappiness, the anger, the fear into joy, into love, into gratitude. Gratitude is a big one. And really into a spiritual life and into becoming a human being living on a fairly high level on this planet.
So, Isabel, this might sound like a simple question, but I'm curious, how did you actually do your daily meditation practice in prison? I'd imagine you're surrounded by all kinds of pressures and energies, and how did you manage that?
It took a decent amount of not caring at all what the people around me thought. And I think because of the depth of connection that I had with this practice, I mean, I just knew I needed to do it so that I could get better, you know, so that I could start actually living life. So I had a teacher picture, and I would set it up. So we all have bunk beds, and I was in minimum. So instead of living in a cell, I lived in a common dorm with about 150 other women. And all of our bunks are lined up around the walls. So all four walls are filled with bunks with an aisle, like facing each other. And I, for some reason, was always on the top bunk. So I'd set up like my little picture against the pillow. And in prison, we have something called count time, which is when the guards would go around and count the inmates to make sure that we were all there. This happened about twice a day. So it was great for me because it set up the habit that every day at count, which was like 11 o'clock in the morning, I would sit down and meditate. And the amount of time I meditated was usually 20 to 40 minutes. because that's how long count would take to clear. So what I would do is during that time, is usually what happens is the officers go around, they count you, and then you just wait. So I would sit up, I'd set up my picture, I'd start meditating, and there you go. And people would notice it, and they'd comment on it, but nobody ever really bothered me about it. People just knew it was my thing, and to be honest, a lot of people actually respected me for it. I think they respected the dedication and the commitment and the fact that they knew I took it seriously. So, I mean, sometimes it was hard because sometimes I'd meditate, you know, at night or at different times, and it'd be noisy and everybody's doing goodness knows what. But actually, it almost came about that unanimously people knew not to bother me when I was meditating, like even officers. And that was actually tremendous. And I really, really appreciated that people showed me that level of respect. So it helped me a lot.
I absolutely loved this line that you wrote to Stuart. I'm gonna read it. I do not think so much that I am relying on things to happen as they are relying on me to open. Can you talk a little bit about what that means?
To be honest, I mean, I don't remember the content of hardly any of my letters at this point. And I feel like sometimes what I wrote to Stuart ended up being almost, like, I don't know how to say it. I want to say the word, like, magical, but it would be as if when I was sitting there with his last letter in front of me and a sheet of paper and a pen, that things would just come out of me. Things would just happen. And I think that's really the marvel, not only of our connection, but also of writing and being able to have that bond. There's things that I said to Stuart in those letters that I don't think I would have been able to figure out or say or express had I just been talking to him in person, had I just been, you know, sitting with him informally, because it allowed me to move beyond a place of being the Isabel that was sitting there, that was going through all of these issues. Even though that's exactly what I was writing about, is I often wrote about all the things that I perceived as being like such great difficulties. But nonetheless, being able to write about it, like, it really brought me into another realm. And I think that line in particular, I mean, who knows what I meant in that moment when I wrote it. But I think something that really struck me in the combination of working with Stuart and being in prison was just how maybe illusory life is, like how shallow some of the things in life are. And I think that's also an expression of being in prison, because you begin to see how little substance there is to the things around you. They try to construct prison just like life out here, except with a lot more regulation about when you can and can't do things. And it helped me start to develop the sense that life wasn't about the events that took place around me. It wasn't like, I don't know how to put it exactly. It's just I started to get the sense as I did this work more and more that things around me would change, and that the things around me were changing because I was changing. And so in order for them to happen, I needed to grow more and I needed to open more. And I really struggled a lot with that, because I would use that as a way to look at all of the things that were wrong with me. And that's something I'm still really working on, is being able to learn how to use what happens to me, around me, and with me as a means to open myself without using it as a means to criticize myself. And I think that's really the place where that line had connection with, if that makes sense.
It does. If you're just tuning in now, you're listening to Prison Pipeline with guest host Rachel Lamb. Today I'm interviewing Stuart Perrin and Isabel Sinclair, co-authors of From Darkness to Light, a book of letters written between them while Isabel was incarcerated at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. Could you speak to or speak a little bit about your student-teacher relationship? What does it mean to be a teacher? What does it mean to be a student? And why does this relationship really matter?
I've been teaching this form of meditation for many, many years. And one of the things I've learned is a teacher has only one function in life. And that's to give away everything that he or she has learned. And that really is essential in the relationship because, you know, somebody who truly wants to learn, they're willing to open in enough depth inside to receive what is being taught. And it's not a battle or a struggle between student and teacher. It's really a transmission of what's called shakti, of energy. And this energy really has nothing to do with ego or will or anything of that nature. It has to do with the connection one has with spirit. Excuse me. I have worked long at this, many, many years. And in order for the teachings to work, I have to get free of myself. You know, I have to recognize that Stuart is not doing this. Stuart's ego is not doing this. But the training, the years of inner work, excuse me, has taught me how to get past myself and to transmit that teaching to somebody who really is open to learning it. And all a teacher dreams about is finding somebody who wants that, who really wants to learn, who really wants to open, who wants to grow, who wants a connection with spirit. And it's not just lip service gratitude. It really is by the work they're willing to do on themselves and the willingness to get past themselves so they can open and receive what is being taught. And, you know, I look for that in my life. I look for people who are willing to do that with their lives. And I discover that once a person opens and connects with spirit, understand, what happens is the mind, the ego, their tension, their insecurity, their cough, it no longer guides their life. You understand? It's the spirit. It's this higher energy that flows through them. And in order for that higher energy to flow through them, their heart has to be open. They have to be really balanced inside. You know, their mind has to be quiet. They attain all the things that most people really want to attain. Because everybody knows that that voice in the brain, that yakking, that tension, drives everybody crazy. They know their emotions are very difficult to deal with. But in the practice of inner work, you learn how to master these things. You learn how to get past the chaos inside yourself. And when you learn how to get past the chaos inside yourself, you allow spirit to come in. I always like to compare it to, you know, like renovating a house. When the plumbing is stuffed up, everything comes out the kitchen sink. What's the kitchen sink? It's the human mind. All of that tension backs up, and it makes people crazy. You know, so we need to learn how to clean the pipes. We need to learn how to get the heart open, to get grounded inside, how to master our sexual energy, how to keep the mind quiet, and how to become so open inside that spiritual energy can come into us, and then it can begin to create our life around us much better than we can ever do it. Because when we start creating our life through our mind or emotions, it's all conflict. It's this versus that. It's me versus other people. And it's always, you know, this kind of duality instead of harmony and balance. So what I look for in a student is really somebody who's willing to do this. Somebody who's willing to make the effort to open so deep inside that they're not going to live an ordinary life. They're going to live an extraordinary life, an adventurous life, a life full of wonderment, a life full of love, a life full of joy. And I think that this really is what I look for. And I, you know, a lot of times I find, like Isabel, when I first met her, she was a very unhappy, disturbed young lady. But beneath all that, I could see something else. The same way when my teacher met me, I was a deeply unhappy, you know, crazy kid who was drugged out and, you know, depressed all the time. And But he saw beneath that, and he saw what the possibilities are. And I like to use the metaphor of, like, you know, you're on a raft in a whitewater rapids, you know, and you need somebody who knows how to navigate the raft, who's been down the rapids before. Otherwise, you're going to bounce off every stone and rock in the river. So what a teacher-student relationship is, somebody who's navigated the rapids and is willing to get on that raft with you to show you how to do it. And then the student has to be willing to learn. They have to really be willing to learn, which means that they have to get past judgment and ideas and opinions and what's right and wrong. And they have to learn to open, to receive spiritual energy, and to be guided through a door that really leads them on a path that gets them to God or spirit or whatever you want to call it.
I know for myself, when I first met Stuart, I was a deeply skeptical person. And it took me a lot of time to learn to trust. And so I remember, you know, for the first few weeks, I think it didn't even take very long. Maybe for the first 3 to 4 letters we wrote together. Yeah, I still had that kind of that initial fear, that initial uncertainty. But after that first wall broke.
If I may interject something, she wrote me that nobody ever answers my letters. And after her 4th letter, I wrote her back, I can understand why nobody ever answers your letters. You're arrogant. You know it all. You know, and after that letter, it all changed. The whole thing started to change.
And you know what? I think I really needed somebody to tell me that. And, like, to me, that was a marker that I could trust Stuart, because it meant that he was willing to tell me what was really... Like, he's honest, you know, and that's a quality that's really difficult to find with people who are honest and upfront, because it's not what you think of them that matters. It's not the personal relationship in that sense that matters, you know. But after that, I mean, I remember when I was in Coffee Creek, I just there was one point maybe a year in that I was almost like distraught because of the depth of I guess like just the depth of connection that I felt with Stuart, that I felt with this practice, and like the realization that I had no idea what that would mean for my life. And I knew, it's just like there was a year in that at this point hit me that I knew that when I left, everything would be radically different, and I would have no idea what that would mean and what my life would look like. But I remember feeling so strongly like that this is what I needed to do, and that nothing could ever change that for me. And that was really, really tremendous. And it pulled me through a lot, just knowing that. Because it meant that no matter what I felt, no matter what I discovered within myself, there was an end. There was something on the other side of it. And I knew that if Stuart could see that, it meant it was real. And it meant that I could get there. And I don't think it was obviously the best gift that I've ever gotten, because it got me here. And I think without that, I wouldn't be, the things I was doing would have killed me. So to say the least, I'm very grateful for our connection. And I'm glad. And because I know that this is something that Stuart offers, like he said, to anybody who's willing to do the work. And I think that's what's most important.
See, I'm not looking for students. I've had thousands of students in my life. I'm looking for people that are willing to work in depth on themselves and that truly want to have a spiritual life. And a spiritual life is unique for every human being. No any spiritual energy is going to flow through Isabel the way it flows through me. But my job is to help her, you know, get strong enough inside so that she can find her own unique life, her own unique creativity. And it's going to be very different than mine. And it has to be that way because she's a very different person. So I look for people who they want to learn that. That's all I look for in life. At this point in my life, It's the greatest treasure that can come to me, just finding somebody who really wants to learn that. And I think I found that in Isabel. And that's why I wrote her 80 letters, you know, because I knew what was there and I knew what she wanted. And we had to get past Isabel in order to get there, you know, and we did. To a degree, we still have to get past Isabel a bit, but it's working. You understand? It's working very well, and I'm very grateful for that.
For both of you, what is your hope that this book will bring readers? And then along that same vein, where can readers find the book?
So I know that my personal hope is that this can reach the hands of people who were searching for some depth, for some meaning in their lives, in the same way that I was when I was in Coffee Creek. And I think for me, if it reaches even one person who can look at those letters and see a reflection of themselves in it, and who, like, maybe it opens them in some way, or maybe it helps them see something or change something, whatever way that happens, then that will have been a success for me. And I think that's why our goal is to donate copies of this book to prisons. And I mean, at least in Oregon, there's, I think, 14 different institutions for men, women, and youth. So personally, I'd like to see as many copies get into the prisons as possible.
You know, they say that if you save one life in your lifetime, the gates of heaven open to you. Now, hopefully this book can get into the hands of many inmates in prisons. It can get them to read it and begin to understand that there's a completely different way of living in the world than many of them have been living, a way of opening and finding the one thing that everybody really wants to find, and that's just to love, to be happy, and to have an incredible life. You know, and when you're in a place like Coffee Creek, you don't have to look very far to know that you're in prison. And I found that when I used to give talks in Coffee Creek, people really understood what I was talking about. It was clear to them. Real freedom in life, you know, is not freedom. It's not race. It's not religion. It's not politics. It's not sexuality. The real freedom in life is to get free of oneself. Because once you get free of yourself, all the rest of the stuff just takes place. So I'm hoping that this book gets into the hands of, you know, many people, especially people that are inmates in prisons, and it does something to allow them to recognize that they can truly change. They can truly open and they can truly change the forces of their life, you know, and come out of places like that and have amazing lives. So let's pray, you know, that this is the kind of thing that happens with it. That's why it was published. And yes, we're going to do a GoFundMe, and we're going to try to raise a lot of money. The purpose of the money is to buy these books and to distribute them in prisons.
Also, our book is available on Amazon under the title From Darkness to Light.
Well, I think we're out of time, and I just want to thank you both again for coming in and sharing this inspirational story.
Thank you so much for hosting us, Rachel. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.